Monday, December the 20th, was one of those near-perfect days when I would rather be right where I was, doing what I did, than anywhere else imaginable, Peniel Bay or the Grecian Isles. The White House was beautiful with evergreens, and the great Christmas tree in the Blue Room, decorated with gingerbread men and drums and toy soldiers. The gingerbread was real, as high as one could reach. And up farther, it was ceramics and popcorn strings and miracles of lights. The most beautiful work of art. We'd invited the children of all our friends, staff, of course, our dentists and doctors' families, all the Clark Clifford grandchildren, some 12 or so, to see it. And in the East Room, there was the creche. Mrs. Howard had spent several nights putting it together. A marvelous collection of Neapolitan figures of the 18th century, some earlier, that she had spent her lifetime collecting. She'd given her other collection to the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York. This one she does for us each year. She had begun it for Mrs. Kennedy in 1961. My favorite Christmas picture had been made by it. I had some mistletoe from Texas hanging over the doorways, from the diplomatic entrance with its lighted trees flanking the door, through the great hall with its tall evergreens. The whole house said Christmas at every step. I felt like skipping and saying, "Deck the halls with boughs of holly," as I walked through it. In the morning, I went to the beauty parlor and then welcomed our house guests, the Harding Lawrences, a very attractive young Texas couple, comers in the business world, the Johnny Meekums of Houston. Our day with them at the ranch in the fall had been one of the most memorable I'll ever have. We had a late lunch with Lyndon, the six of us, and then I worked at my desk on all the Christmas details. No matter how much planning ahead we do, about 5 or 6 days before Christmas, Lyndon gets frantic, thinking about all the things he wants to do for all the people he loves, heaping the work on all of those around him. Think up names, plan gifts, get it done. I know it must result in many midnight hours for secretaries and picture framers and merchants and parcel post deliverers. But after more than 30 years, I at least should know to expect it. Then came the big event of the day, our dinner in honor of Chancellor Earhart. We opened up all the stops and rang forth the Christmas carols. We met Chancellor Earhart at the door of the diplomatic entrance, with a 60-member chorus from the American Light Opera Company stretched along the steps up to the balcony above. These great, graceful steps are part of the mansion that have seldom been used for their full drama, but there was never a better stage setting than tonight. And then, for pictures, we mounted the steps with the Chancellor and stood on the balcony, Lyndon and the Chancellor, flanked by me and Lucy. Linda managed to be in the background. The lighted tree down front, and the carol singers giving forth with an infectious joy that got the evening off to the gayest of starts, while I tried my best to look into the eyes of each one up and down the stairs to telegraph the message, "Thank you." We went upstairs to the Yellow Room for our cocktail and the exchange of gifts. It was a marvelous hunting rifle for Lyndon, and an engraving of George Washington, and clocks for the girls. And then downstairs to the East Room for the receiving line. I'm getting very much at home with the German government. Dr. Karl Karstens, State Secretary of the Foreign Office. Ambassador Napstein. Franz Krapp, Helga's husband. He's my friend from the Capitol Speakers Club. At the ranch, he'd brought me the beautiful Christmas angel. Heinz Weber, the interpreter. And, of course, Dr. Gerhard Schroeder, the Minister of Foreign Affairs. Hubert and Muriel were there. And from the cabinet, the Rusks, the Orions, and the Udalls. A rather small contingent from the House and Senate because they're out of session. And the papers, of course, made much of the fact that John Sparkman, number 2 on Foreign Affairs, was there instead of Fulbright. He's actually been invited to the White House some 11 or so times to dinners or luncheons for foreign dignitaries. And this year, more than any other member of the Senate, the Muskies, Mrs. Kelly, and the Frelinghausens completed the congressional delegation. And Dean Acheson was there. Shall I classify him as old friend, a foreign affairs expert? And from the staff, the George Reedys, and the Jack Valentes, and the Lee Whites, the Douglas MacArthurs from the State Department. I'd last really visited with them when he was ambassador to Belgium on our fall trip in '63. From the world of educators, Dr. and Mrs. Frank Rose, he's president of the University of Alabama, and Dr. Margaret Clapp, president of Wellesley. And from entertainment, Gene Autry, whom we've known since the campaign of 1946, and Van Cliburn, Lucy's special friend, and Roberta Peters, the lovely singer who'd been so helpful in the June arts festivals. And Dr. and Mrs. James Conant, he's a former ambassador to Germany, as well as former head of Harvard. Among old friends were Anna Rosenberg Hoffman and her husband Paul Hoffman, the Oscar Chapmans, and the Frank Eichards, and the Bill Kerrs, Senator Kerr's son from Oklahoma, and the Lester Lindos, who are so dear to Lucy, and the Bill Deasons, and at the last moment, Dr. Willis Hearst. Nobody there was a gladder to have. The press was represented by the Price Days, editor and publisher of the Baltimore Sun, Norman Cousins, editor of Saturday Review. I should be classing him under intellectuals. And the young couple who've covered us all fall in Texas, the Sid Davises of Westinghouse Broadcasting, the Max Friedmans, and the Jack Goulds, who'd written a marvelous review of my ABC show, the John Pomfrets of the New York Times, the John Steeles of Time and Life, and the Lucian Warrens of the Buffalo Courier Express. Quite a contingent of the press here tonight. And Francis Lewin, who covers me more than anybody. Probably to the surprise of a lot of people, was former Governor and Mrs. Tom Dewey from New York. In one moment in the line, he and I laughed together over the last time he had been at the White House. Probably nobody ever spent a more hectic day and night. And among White House benefactors was Richard Dietrich, who'd given us the Thomas Sully of Fanny Kemble, and Mrs. Edward Hutton, who'd given us the lovely rug that we use in the Vermeer Room. From Arts and Letters, there were the Ralph Ellisons, who's a Negro author, Dr. John Hope Franklin and his wife, professor and author. Linda Bird had Paul Dresser as her escort. Besides the Meekums and the Lawrences, the Ed Rhodes Rose of Austin were our house guests. And Gordon Bunshaft, who's just been chosen to do the Lyndon Baines Johnson Library, we'd added for that very good reason. We were all in one room, since the Chancellor had no spouse with him. And when we went in to dinner, he was on my right and Gerhard Schroeder, the Minister of Foreign Affairs, on my left. And then had Mrs. Napstein and Mrs. Humphrey. Dinner was delicious lobster, and then roast duckling, and at the end, a beautifully decorated yule log. This was Renee's last dinner for us, and he did the lobster. Superb it was. And Nick did the duck, and Ferdinand the dessert, the yule log, as usual. I found the Chancellor good company with better English than I had expected. I remarked about the fact that I read that the population of Germany, his Germany, consisted of 20 or 25% of people who had come from the other side of the Iron Curtain. He said yes, and that was at a time when there was hardly enough jobs, enough houses, enough to eat for those who normally lived there. It was quite a job of absorption into the social and economic life. Since he's the architect of that post-war revival, reconstruction, success, whatever name you give it, it was a good subject for us to talk about. And also, it was always a reliable subject with every chief of state, how I would like to visit your country. And indeed I would, especially a boat trip on the Rhine. During dessert, we had an innovation. Instead of the singing violins, we had the University of Maryland madrigal singers dressed in colorful Renaissance costumes, ruby reds and moss greens and dull golds. They strolled around the tables and sang 16th and 17th century Christmas carols. It was enchanting. We were all caught up in the storybook atmosphere. And then there were the toasts. Lyndon announced to Earhart and the other 140 or so guests that he would shortly send to Europe a commission to discuss joint explorations in space, leading to probes of the Sun and of Jupiter. And in a much lighter vein, he said, "There's no truth to the rumor that your reputation as an economist prompted us to invite you to visit us at budget time." Earhart gave his toast in German, and then it was translated, so that made it much longer. He gave the United States credit for having extended the hand of friendship that enabled them to get back on their feet after World War II. Coming from him, this had a special ring, because he was himself so much responsible for that getting back on the feet. And then he said, in an unusual vein of candor, The United States is making great sacrifices to defend the security of the people in Vietnam. I feel ashamed because what we can contribute is very modest in comparison to what the United States is contributing.
I'm sure before he gets out of town, Lyndon will ask him in just as forceful a manner as possible, how much more can they contribute?
Lyndon used his toast, as he does everything these days, to talk about peace.
There will be peace in Vietnam the moment others are ready to stop their attacks, and reaffirmed that we are going to keep this country moving forward toward the great society. After dinner, he took the Chancellor upstairs, along with Hubert and Dean Rusk and Bob McNamara and George Ball and Mac George and Jack Valenti, of course Napstein and George McGee. They were gone for a good half hour. We had coffee and brandy in the green room and in the red room, and everybody strolled around the Christmas tree admiring it. And then, for the entertainment of the evening, into the gold room, where I introduced Robert Merrill, who, bless him, is performing for us for the third time, First Senior of Italy, in the Salute to Congress. I'll never forget him in that buckskin jacket. And then tonight, with the Madrigal Singers, singing Silent Night in German and in English, asking all of us to join him. I was so assured of the evening's success and so relaxed that I could actually giggle when I finished my introduction and wished our guests a sehr fröhliche Weihnachten, most Merry Christmas. It was one of the best programs we'd ever had in the White House, I thought. Only about 20 minutes, perfect for the time and mood. And then pictures and out into the hall with champagne being passed. Almost on the stroke of midnight, Chancellor left. We accompanied him out to the front door in a light fall of snow, the last perfect touch for the evening. It was really Christmas. And then back for dancing. And then danced with me and Mrs. Napstein, and then several times with Roberta Peters. Sometime during the night, it had occurred to me, in spite of our precautions, we wound up by having Roberta Peters here the same night as her ex-husband, Bob Merrill. I'd worn my favorite dress, the red St. Maur, but although it had a little train, I danced and danced, and ever so many of the guests said happy birthday. It was only 2 days away. I had a quiet moment with Dr. Hurst in the blue room by the Christmas tree, watching the snow fall as we looked out toward the monument, caught up in 10 years of memories and a very real friendship and the magic of the evening. Lucy had been able to have Bill Hitchcock, both dinner and the dancing, at the last minute, and she was making sure Van Cliburn had a good time. She looked lovely in white. It was well after 1 before I went up, and Lyndon stayed after me, and it was 2 o'clock before the music died away, and we'd said good night to our house guests. It will be hard to ever have a party in the White House, but I shall enjoy more.